Hey everyone, welcome to another deep dive.
Excited to be here.
Today we're going to be tackling something I think we all struggle with.
Oh, yeah.
Habits, how
Definitely.
to build good ones, break those bad ones.
For sure.
So, you sent over that YouTube video summarizing Atomic Habits by James Clear.
Oh, yeah, that was a good one.
So, we're going to unpack some of the key takeaways from that.
Awesome.
I think one of the things that's so fascinating about his whole approach
Yeah.
is this idea that it's not about those like massive overhauls.
Right.
It's about those tiny little changes, the 1% shifts
Like, you don't have
that can
to.
actually have a bigger impact over time.
Yeah, you don't have to boil the ocean. You
Yeah.
just make these little incremental changes.
Exactly. It's like,
It's like,
forget the New Year's resolutions.
yeah.
Let's just focus on like, what's that one little thing we could do differently today?
Yeah. And like one thing that really resonated with me in that video was this concept of the Valley of Disappointment. It's like that period where you're putting in the effort, but
Yeah.
you're not seeing the results yet.
Oh my gosh, I know that feeling all too well.
Yeah.
It's like when you start a new workout program or you're trying to eat healthier and
Down
you're
to
like
earth.
a couple of weeks in and you haven't seen any changes and you're like, oh, what's the point?
Yeah, and that's where most people give up.
Totally.
They're like, oh, this isn't working.
Yeah.
But Clear's argument is that it's actually like understanding that valley
Yeah.
and pushing through it. That's like the key to actually like achieving that change you want.
So it's like we almost need to reframe our thinking
Right.
around those early stages.
Yeah.
And instead of being so discouraged by the lack of visible progress, it's like, well,
It's part of the
yeah,
process.
it's part of the
We're
process.
gonna go through it. You just gotta power through.
Okay. So patience, persistence, key here. But how do we actually cultivate that,
Yeah.
when we are in the thick of it
Yeah.
and we're feeling discouraged?
Well, one of the things that Clear says is that we might be focusing too much on goals.
They really?
Yeah.
Because everyone talks about goal
I
setting.
know.
It's like the key to success.
Well, they are important for setting direction.
Okay.
But think about it, winners and losers often have the same
Oh,
goals,
that's interesting.
right? And achieving a goal is a momentary thing. What happens after you hit the goal?
Yeah, I've definitely experienced that post-goal slump. Like you
Exactly.
hit this big milestone and you're like, oh,
Now what?
now what?
Yeah.
Okay.
So he advocates instead for focusing on building systems.
Systems. Okay.
Yeah, because the system is the process that
Yeah.
drives those results.
Okay.
And it's what creates lasting change.
So instead of just like fixating on that destination, we should be more concerned with the journey itself
Yeah.
and like establishing those daily practices that will ultimately get us there.
Yeah, like those small,
Bonk.
consistent actions that compound over time.
This is reminding me of in the video, he talks about getting 1% better each day.
Yes.
And it doesn't sound like much.
It doesn't sound like much.
But over the course of a year, you're
Huge.
like 38 times better.
It's the power of compounding.
It's crew.
And it applies to everything.
Yeah.
Finances,
Relationships.
health,
Yeah.
how habits.
Okay.
So it's like those tiny little seemingly insignificant choices we make each day
Nope, absolutely.
could actually have like this huge
It's
impact
huge impact.
on who we become in the long run.
It's like those little course adjustments that a
Yeah.
pilot makes on a plane.
Yeah.
Tiny shift at takeoff can mean the difference between landing in LA or ending up in Tijuana.
Wow, that's a powerful analogy.
Yeah.
Okay, so we've established habits are important,
Yes.
systems are the key,
Yeah.
but how do we actually go about like
Yeah.
changing those ingrained patterns of behavior?
So Clear breaks down the mechanics of habit formation
Okay.
into what he calls the habit loop.
And the habit loop has four stages: cue, craving, response, and reward.
Right. And he uses that example of like your phone buzzing. Right.
Yes.
So the buzz is the cue. It triggers the craving, like, oh, who messaged me?
Right.
The response is you pick up the phone.
Right.
And then the reward is you get that hit of dopamine, that satisfaction
Exactly.
of knowing.
At the heart of every habit, good or bad.
And what's so interesting is how easily that can be hijacked,
Totally.
especially by those bad habits that tend to like sneak up on
Like
us.
you don't even realize it.
So instead of my phone buzzing,
Yeah.
it's maybe like I have a stressful deadline at work, and that's the cue.
Right.
The craving is to escape the stress.
Yeah.
So the response is I mindlessly scroll through social media.
You get that temporary relief.
Yeah, that temporary relief. And
Yeah.
so it's like we're not even consciously thinking about it. We're
Right.
just kind of on autopilot.
Autopilot,
So the
exactly.
key is to like
Become aware
become aware.
of those cues.
Yeah. So step one, become a habit detective.
Yes.
Pay attention to those triggers and the patterns that they set in motion.
Once you understand that loop, you can actually start to change it.
So it makes me think about the tool that he suggests in the book, which is the habit scorecard.
Oh, yeah.
Where you basically
have a list.
Make a list.
With all your habits.
From the moment you wake up to the moment you go to bed.
Right.
And you categorize them.
Positive, negative, neutral.
Positive, negative, or neutral.
Mm-hmm.
So no judgment at this point.
Just observation.
Pure observation.
Yeah.
Okay. And then once we have that awareness.
Right.
Then we can start to like strategically design our environment.
Yeah. And our routines.
To support the habits we want to cultivate.
Exactly. And that's where his four laws of behavior change come in.
Okay. Let's dive into those.
Okay.
So the first one is make it obvious.
Mm-hmm.
And what he says here is avoid being vague.
Yes.
When you're trying to establish a new habit.
Like, don't just say, I'm going to eat healthier.
Yeah, I'm going to eat healthier.
Right.
Or I'm going to exercise more.
It's too broad.
It's too broad. Like, what does that actually mean?
What does that even mean?
So he recommends using this like very specific formula called the implementation intention.
I love this one.
Which is, I will behavior at time and location.
Yes.
So instead of, I'm going to eat healthier.
Yeah.
It's, I will eat a salad for lunch at 1 p.m. at my desk.
There you go. Much better.
Much more concrete.
Yes.
Actionable.
Love it.
And then another technique is habit stacking.
Yes.
Which is basically like linking a new habit.
To an existing one.
To an existing one.
Something you already do.
And the formula for that one is, after current habit, I will new habit.
Yeah.
So, for example, after I brush my teeth, I will meditate for 5 minutes.
I love that.
So you're piggybacking on that.
Yeah, you pick a good trigger.
Existing habit, something you're already doing consistently.
Yeah, something you already do without thinking. And then you stack that new habit on top of it.
So with that first law, it's all about making those cues for our desired habits super obvious.
Obvious.
And then using those cues to trigger the desired action.
Yes.
Okay, so we've made it obvious.
Okay.
What's the next step in hacking that habit loop?
So once you figured out your cue, then you got to make the behavior attractive.
Okay, make it attractive. That's law number two.
Number two.
Okay, and this is where dopamine comes into play.
Dopamine, yes.
Yeah.
That pleasure and reward.
That neurotransmitter that's all about.
Exactly.
Pleasure and reward.
And it's the anticipation
of
the reward that's even more motivating.
So like when you're planning a vacation, sometimes the excitement leading up to it is even better than the actual trip.
Yes, exactly.
Oh, okay.
And this is what all these like companies that design addictive apps and products, they tap into this.
Like they know,
you know,
how to trigger that dopamine.
Yes.
And keep us hooked.
They're very good at it.
Okay, so how do we harness that dopamine power for good?
Yeah.
How do we make those healthy habits
that
don't always offer that immediate gratification more appealing?
So he talks about temptation bundling.
Temptation bundling, okay.
Which is basically pairing something you need to do with something you want to do.
So like only allowing yourself to watch your favorite Netflix show while you're on the treadmill.
Perfect example.
Okay, I can get behind that.
Yeah, so you're basically leveraging that dopamine hit to make that less appealing task more enticing.
It's brilliant.
And it also kind of like reprograms your brain to actually enjoy it.
So instead of thinking, ugh, I have to go to the gym.
Right.
It's, I get to move my body.
Yes.
I get to feel energized.
I get to relieve some stress.
Okay.
It's a subtle shift, but it can make a difference.
Okay, so we made it obvious.
Yeah.
We made it attractive.
Mm-hmm.
What's next?
Number three, make it easy.
Make it easy.
Reduce the friction.
And this is where I think a lot of people get tripped up.
Yes.
Because there's that whole misconception that it takes a certain amount of time.
Oh, yeah. Like the 21 day.
To form a new habit.
The 21 day rule.
Yeah. Like 21 days or 30 days or whatever.
Right.
And Clear actually like challenges that whole misconception.
Yeah. He says it's not about time. It's about repetition.
Repetition.
The more you repeat an action, the more automatic it becomes.
So consistency, not duration.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And he calls this the law of least effort.
Law of least effort.
Which basically means that the easier it is to do something, the more likely we are to do it.
Which makes total sense.
Yes.
So if we want to build good habits, we need to reduce the friction.
Yes.
And if we want to break bad habits, we need to increase the friction.
Increase it. Exactly.
Okay.
So this is where you get into that idea of like priming your environment.
Okay.
Like you lay out your workout clothes the night before.
Okay.
Or you put your water bottle like in places where you're going
to
see it.
Like, so you remember to drink more water.
Exactly. You just make it as easy as possible.
I love that.
Yeah.
It's like you're setting yourself up for success.
Exactly.
Okay. And then he also suggests using this thing called the 2-minute rule.
Oh, yeah.
Which is like the idea of breaking down those intimidating goals.
Yeah, those big, overwhelming.
Into those tiny, manageable starting points.
Yes.
So instead of aiming to run a marathon.
Right.
You start by just putting on your running shoes.
Just put on the shoes.
Okay. So yeah. It's like, just get started.
Just get started.
Build the momentum. And yep. Then you can gradually increase.
Yes.
Okay. That's such a good way to combat that overwhelm.
Yeah, because that's what stops a lot of people. They just get overwhelmed and they're like, I can't do this.
And then they just don't even start.
Yeah.
Okay. So we've made it obvious.
Yeah.
We've made it attractive. Yeah. We've made it easy.
What's the final law?
Final law, make it satisfying.
Make it satisfying.
And this is where we tap into that reward system, mm-hmm. right? If a behavior doesn't feel good, we're as likely to do it again.
Exactly.
Now, the challenge is that bad habits often offer that, like,
instant gratification.
Immediate gratification.
Yeah. And then the consequences are delayed.
Yeah. Think about like eating junk food.
Yes.
It tastes good in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
But then later on, you might feel kind of gross and sluggish.
Exactly.
And regretful. Whereas good habits often require us to delay gratification.
Delay gratification.
And we don't always feel those positive effects right away.
Yeah.
So how do we bridge that gap?
Yeah.
How do we make those good habits feel more satisfying?
In the moment.
In the moment.
So we repeat them.
So we repeat them.
So one of the things CLEAR talks about is visual measures of progress.
Okay.
So think like habit trackers.
Okay.
Workout logs, even like crossing things off your to-do list.
I'm a big fan of habit trackers.
Yeah, it feels good.
There's something so satisfying about like visually seeing your progress.
And he also talks about the importance of like showing up even on those days when you don't feel like it.
Yeah.
Like even doing a tiny version of the habit is better than skipping it altogether.
It's about building that consistency.
Yes.
Like the identity of someone who sticks to their commitment.
You're that type of person who follows through.
And then he also suggests using accountability partners.
Yes.
And what he calls habit contracts.
Yeah.
Which is basically putting something on the line.
Yeah.
Money. Maybe social consequences.
When you get hurt.
To make those commitments more appealing.
Yeah.
So like having a friend that you check in with on your progress or, you know, putting money in a jar if you don't follow through.
Yeah.
So it's like adding that external accountability to support that internal motivation.
Yeah. You need both.
So there you have it.
There it is.
The four laws of behavior change. Make it obvious.
Make it attractive.
Make it easy.
And make it satisfying.
It's like a recipe for habit transformation.
I love it.
Now, what I thought was so cool about that video you shared was how the creator actually
applied
these principles to his own life.
Yeah.
He had two good habits that he was trying to solidify.
Yep.
Consistent workouts and daily reading.
Yes.
And then, of course, he had the bad habit he was trying to break.
The social media.
The social media trap.
Yeah.
I think we can all relate to that one.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Okay, so let's start with the workout habit.
Okay.
How did he use those four laws to make it happen?
So for the workout habit, he started with make it obvious.
Okay.
And he used the implementation intention formula.
Okay.
And he decided, I will work out at 6 a.m. in the living room.
Time and location, crystal clear.
Yeah.
No room for ambiguity.
Nope. I love it. And he didn't just stop there. He actually like redesigned his environment to support the habit.
Interesting.
So he took his dumbbells out of the closet, put them in the living room.
So they were visible.
So they were visible.
Readily available.
Yeah.
So it's like he's not even just relying on willpower.
No.
At this point, he's actually changing his surroundings.
Yeah.
To make the desired behavior the easiest option.
The path of least resistance.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. And I remember he also...
Oh, he put pictures up.
Pictures up.
Of fit people.
Around the house.
Around the house, yeah.
So it's like those visual reminders.
Those little cues, yeah.
Yeah, to kind of like subliminally shift his mindset.
Mm-hmm.
And then to make it attractive, he bundled it with something he enjoys, which is listening to podcasts.
Okay, so he's getting his workout in, but he's also like indulging in something he enjoys.
So it doesn't feel so much like a chore.
Right. He's making it fun.
Yeah.
I like it.
Yeah.
And I remember he also talked about like using that reprogramming technique.
Instead of
where he's kind of like shifting, I have to work out.
Yeah.
It's I get to
build strength.
I get to move my body.
Yeah, I get to feel good.
It's such a subtle shift.
Yeah.
But it can make a big difference.
It changes your whole attitude about it.
Okay, so make it easy.
Yeah.
What did he do there?
The 2-minute rule.
The 2-minute rule?
He's all about it.
Okay.
So he told himself, all I have to do is put on my workout clothes and stretch for 2 minutes.
That's brilliant.
Yeah.
Because then you can't say, I don't have time.
Right.
Because who doesn't have 2 minutes?
Exactly.
And then what did he find?
Often he would just keep going.
Once he got started.
Once he got started, yeah. He's like, all right, I'm already doing it.
It's the power of momentum.
Yeah.
Okay. And then what else?
And then he had a rule that he wouldn't check his phone.
Oh, until after.
Until after his workout.
So that's like eliminating distractions.
Yes. No distractions.
I'm so bad about that.
It's so easy.
Especially in the morning.
To just get sucked in. Like, first thing you do is pick up your phone. You're like, oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Down the rabbit hole.
And then last but not least, to really prime that environment for success.
Yeah.
He would lay out his shoes, yoga mat, dumbbells.
The night before.
The night before.
Yeah.
So it's all ready to go.
Ready to go. No excuses.
I do that too.
It makes a difference.
It makes a difference because you wake up and it's like.
Yeah, it's like you've already committed.
You've already committed.
Yeah.
There are no excuses.
Yeah. And you're reinforcing that identity.
Yeah.
Like, I'm the type of person who works out.
Okay. So he's got the first three laws covered.
Okay.
Obvious.
Attractive.
Attractive.
Easy.
Easy. How did he make it satisfying?
Habit tracker.
Habit tracker. Accountability.
Okay.
So he had a calendar,
yeah.
Tracked his workouts.
Aye.
And just the visual representation of like seeing that consistency was really rewarding.
I love that. Because
yeah.
It's like, you're like, oh.
Yeah, I'm doing this.
I'm showing up for myself.
Oh.
Yeah. Look at that streak.
You know, I remember he also had like a little accountability thing going with his partner.
Oh, yeah. He would send a picture of his calorie burn.
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah, to his partner.
It's like a little party.
Positive reinforcement.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you got somebody cheering you on.
Yeah.
Love that.
And most importantly, he like focused on developing that identity.
Yeah.
Of someone who enjoys fitness.
Okay.
And rarely misses a workout.
So it's like he believed that he was capable of sticking to it.
Yeah.
And that belief fueled his actions,
mm.
Which then reinforced the belief.
Exactly.
It's like this positive feedback loop.
Positive feedback loop.
Okay, I'm loving all these practical examples.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's move on to the reading habit.
Okay.
How did he use those four laws?
All right, so for the reading habit.
To cultivate that daily reading practice.
He started with habit stacking.
Okay.
And his trigger was making his morning coffee.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah.
Okay, so after he made his coffee, he would sit down and read for 90 minutes.
So he's linking it to something he already enjoys.
Exactly.
It's like that morning coffee ritual becomes the cue for reading.
And then he also had this rule of one space, one use.
One space, one use.
Yeah, so his apartment balcony
became
his reading zone.
So he's creating that association.
Yes,
between that location and that activity.
Yeah, it's like how they say your bed should ideally only be for sleep.
Exactly.
You don't want to be like working in bed or watching TV in bed.
Right.
Because then your brain gets all confused.
Yeah. And then, of course, like he used that dopamine hit.
Yeah.
Of the anticipation of coffee to make the reading more appealing.
So over time, that craving for coffee became associated with the pleasure of reading.
Exactly.
That's so smart.
Yeah.
Okay. And then 2 minute rule.
2 minute rule.
Did he use that for this one too?
He did. He would just start with one page.
One page. Okay.
From the Daily Stoic.
By Ryan Holiday.
Okay.
And he knew that if he could just get himself to read one page, he'd probably keep going.
It's amazing how much progress you can make.
Yeah.
When you just start small.
Small, consistent steps.
And focus on consistency over time.
It's all it takes.
Okay. And then how did he make it satisfying?
So for this one, he really relied on the intrinsic rewards of reading.
So the pleasure.
Yeah, the pleasure of
learning new things.
Immersing himself in a good story.
Okay.
And then he also found that tracking.
Oh, so he still tracked.
Yeah, he tracked his progress.
Okay.
Like how many books he read each month.
Okay.
How many pages he read each day.
And that just provided that extra little.
Yeah, a little boost.
Okay.
And then, of course, we have to talk about.
The bad habit.
The social media scroll.
Okay. How did he tackle that one?
So he started by making it less appealing.
Okay.
Less attractive.
Okay.
By making his phone less interesting.
Interesting. So instead of trying to resist the temptation, he's actually like reducing the power of the temptation itself.
Exactly. He deleted a bunch of apps that he knew were time wasters.
Okay. So he's curating his digital environment.
Exactly.
Right.
And then he used that reprogramming technique where he highlighted the downsides of too much social media.
So he's shifting his mindset.
Yeah.
Instead of like focusing on the dopamine hits.
Yeah.
He's like, actually, like, no, this is not.
That's not good for me.
Serving me.
Yeah.
And I remember he literally would like say to himself.
Yeah, he would say things like, consuming is the easy, lazy option. I want to be a producer, not a consumer.
Wow, that's powerful.
Yeah.
It's like he's appealing to like his higher self.
Yeah.
Right?
He's got bigger aspirations.
And then to increase the friction.
Yeah.
Make it harder to do.
He would keep his phone out of sight.
Oh, so no more phone on the desk.
Nope.
While he's working.
Put it in a drawer in another room.
So it's not tempting him.
Yeah.
Out of sight, out of mind. Yeah.
And then he also had this little accountability thing with his partner.
Okay.
If she caught him using social media during work hours.
$10.
$10.
She gets $10.
No. Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah.
Okay, so it sounds like he took a very, like, multi-pronged approach.
Yeah, he had to attack it from all angles.
I love how practical and creative he is with this approach.
And, you know, it just shows you don't have to be perfect.
Yeah.
You just got to find what works for you.
And be willing to experiment.
Yeah.
And it's so inspiring to see how he was able to break free from that bad habit.
By using the four laws.
By using the four laws.
Yeah.
And it really highlights the importance of, like,
Experimentation. Like, what works for him might not work for someone else.
Right. So it's about finding your own...
Your own blend of strategies.
Your own unique blend of strategies.
Yeah.
Okay. And, you know, speaking of...
Journeys. I'm reminded of another point from the video, which was this whole idea of, like, embracing failure as part of the process.
Yes.
Planning for flip-ups.
He even had that great quote.
Oh, was it?
Lost days hurt you more than successful days help you.
Ooh, that's good.
Yeah, it's powerful.
So it's a reminder that, like, those slip-ups, they can really set us back.
They can. And his rule was never miss twice in a row.
What?
Yeah, so even if he had a bad day.
Host.
Exactly. So even if he had a bad day and totally fell off track, he would always make sure to get back on track the next day.
So it's about, like, minimizing the damage.
Yeah, like damage control.
And not letting those slip-ups, like, spiral into, you know, a pattern of self-sabotage.
Exactly. And he also emphasized that even doing a tiny version of the habit is better than doing nothing at all.
So if you don't have time for a full workout, just do a few push-ups.
A few push-ups.
Or if you're feeling too tired to read, just read one paragraph.
Just one paragraph.
It's about maintaining that momentum, even on those days where you're not feeling it.
And you're still reinforcing that identity.
Right.
Like, I'm the type of person who shows up.
Who follows through.
Yeah.
And he even suggested incorporating this into your habit contract.
Oh, yeah.
Interesting. How would that work?
So, for example, your contract could state that if you miss a workout, you have to do at least 5 push-ups that day, no matter what.
Okay.
Or if you skip your reading, you have to read at least 1 page before bed.
I love that.
Yeah.
It's like a minimum baseline.
Minimum baseline.
For consistency.
Yeah.
Even when you're not feeling your best.
And he even talked about, like, reframing bad days as opportunities for growth.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah.
So instead of beating yourself up for, like, messing up.
Right.
You're like, oh, this is actually.
Valuable data.
A learning experience.
Yeah.
I can use this to improve my approach.
Adjust your system.
Okay. And that brings us back to this whole idea of identity-based habits.
Yes.
Which he kind of weaves throughout his entire approach.
It's the foundation.
It's like one of the most impactful concepts in the book.
Oh, sure.
Okay, let's dive into that because I'm really intrigued by this idea of, like, identity being so central to habit change.
So he says most people try to change their habits by focusing on what they want to achieve.
Okay.
But the real key is to focus on who they want to become.
So instead of setting a goal to lose 10 pounds.
Right.
It's about becoming the type of person
who prioritizes their health.
Who prioritizes their health and makes those healthy choices.
Effortlessly.
Yeah. Because ultimately, like, our current habits are a reflection of our current identity.
Exactly.
So if you want to change your habits, you need to change your beliefs.
Your beliefs about yourself. Yeah.
So how do you actually, like, go about changing your identity? Because it sounds kind of, like, abstract and intimidating.
Right.
Like, where do you even begin?
He says you start with small wins.
Okay.
Like, every time you act in alignment with your desired identity, you're reinforcing that belief.
So it's like that whole, like, self-fulfilling prophecy
thing. Exactly. Fake it till you make it.
If you act like the person you want to be.
You become that person.
You eventually become that person.
Yeah.
So it's like if you tell yourself, I'm a runner.
Yeah.
And then you go for a run.
Even if it's a short one.
Even if it's just a short one.
You're proving to yourself that you're the type of person who follows through.
And that builds momentum.
Yeah.
And reinforces the identity.
It does.
And he emphasizes that, like, this is an ongoing process.
It is.
Right.
You don't just decide one day.
It's not like a one and done thing.
And then you're done.
It's like you're constantly.
It's a practice.
Choosing to act in ways that align with that desired self.
It is.
Even when it's hard.
Even when it's hard.
This is making me think about all the times that I've told myself.
Yeah.
Like, oh, I'm not a morning person.
Right.
Or I'm not good at sticking to a budget.
Yeah.
Or I'm not a runner.
And those are just beliefs.
Maybe those limiting beliefs.
Yeah.
Are actually holding me back.
They are.
From becoming the person I want to be.
They are.
So if we want to change our habits, we need to start by changing the stories we tell ourselves.
The stories we tell ourselves.
About who we are.
About who we are.
And what we're capable of.
What we're capable of.
Wow, this is really powerful stuff.
It is.
Okay, so before we wrap up part one of this deep dive,
yeah.
Is there anything else you want to highlight about this whole idea of identity-based habits?
I think the key takeaway here is that it's not about achieving some external goal or checking things off a to-do list.
Yeah.
It's about aligning your actions with your values and beliefs.
So it's about, like, becoming the author, of your own story.
Yes.
One small habit at a time.
It really is about becoming the architect of your own life and recognizing that your habits are the building blocks of that design.
This is reminding me of something you mentioned earlier, that whole idea of those tiny course adjustments that a pilot makes.
Right, like that small shift at takeoff that can mean the difference between landing in LA and ending up in Tijuana.
Exactly. So how do we make sure we're making those tiny course adjustments in the right direction? How do we ensure that our habits are leading us towards our desired destination, that version of ourselves we're striving to become?
That's where Clear's four laws of behavior change really come in handy. They give us a practical framework for designing those tiny shifts, for making sure those 1% improvements are actually moving us in the right direction.
You know what I loved about that video you shared? How the creator walked us through his own personal experiments with those four laws.
Yes, it's so helpful to see those principles in action, to see how someone actually applies them in their daily life.
It makes it feel so much more real and achievable, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so let's revisit his journey. He was working on two good habits, a consistent workout routine and a daily reading habit. And then there was the bad habit he was trying to break, that all too familiar social media trap.
Right. And he tackled each one using a slightly different approach tailored to the specific challenge.
Okay, let's start with the workout habit. I'm always looking for ways to make exercise more appealing and less of a chore. What did he do?
Well, he started with the first law, make it obvious, by using the implementation intention formula. He decided, I will work out at 6 a.m. in the living room. Crystal clear, no room for ambiguity.
Time and location locked in.
And he didn't stop there. He went a step further and actually redesigned his environment to support the habit. He moved his dumbbells out of the closet and into the living room so they were visible and readily available.
So he's not just relying on willpower here. He's actually changing his surroundings to make the desired behavior the easiest option.
Exactly. He even put up pictures of fit people around the house as visual reminders.
Subtle but effective. It's like he's surrounding himself with cues that align with his desired identity.
And to make the habit more attractive, he tapped into the second law. Make it attractive by bundling it with something he enjoys. Listening to his favorite podcast while he works out.
So smart. It's like he's giving himself a little reward, a little something to look forward to, while also taking care of his health.
He's basically gamifying the experience, making it more enjoyable.
And I remember he also used that reprogramming technique where he reframed his thinking about exercise.
Right. Instead of telling himself he has to work out, he focuses on the positive aspects. He gets to build strength. He gets to feel energized. He gets to take care of his body.
It's amazing how much of a difference a subtle shift in perspective can make.
And to address the third law, make it easy. He incorporated the 2-minute rule.
Right. That brilliant strategy of breaking down intimidating goals into tiny, manageable starting points.
Exactly. He told himself all he had to do was put on his workout clothes and stretch for 2 minutes.
Which is such a genius way to overcome that initial resistance.
And of course, once he got started, he often found himself doing a full workout.
The magic of momentum. Like, once that ball gets rolling, it's easier to keep it going.
And to further reduce friction, he made a rule to avoid checking his phone until after his workout was done.
Eliminating that potential distraction. I'm definitely guilty of getting sucked into my phone first thing in the morning.
It's so easy to get sidetracked, especially in our hyper-connected world.
Okay, so he's making it obvious. He's making it attractive. He's making it easy. How did he tackle that final law? Make it satisfying.
He used a combination of a habit tracker and accountability. He used a calendar to visually track his workouts, and that simple act of marking off each day gave him a sense of accomplishment.
Love that. Visualizing your progress can be so motivating.
And then he added that extra layer of accountability by sending a picture of his calorie burn to his partner after each workout.
It's like a little virtual high five. It's a way to share your wins with someone who's supporting you.
And most importantly, he focused on cultivating the identity of someone who enjoys fitness and rarely misses a workout.
So it's not just about checking off boxes. It's about embodying that identity, becoming that person who prioritizes their health and well-being.
Exactly. He's not just going through the motions. He's aligning his actions with his beliefs and values.
This is so inspiring. Okay, let's move on to the reading habit. How did he use those four laws to make daily reading a reality?
Well, he started with the second law, make it attractive, by linking it to an existing habit, his morning coffee ritual. After he made his coffee, he would immediately sit down and read for 90 minutes.
So he's not just relying on willpower, he's cleverly leveraging the power of association.
Exactly. He's associating that pleasurable experience of enjoying his morning coffee with the act of reading.
And that makes the whole experience more appealing, less of a chore.
And to create a clear cue for the habit, he designated his apartment balcony as his dedicated reading space.
That's a great idea. It's like creating a mental trigger, associating a specific location with a specific activity.
He's essentially priming his environment to support his desired behavior.
And again, he used that two-minute rule, starting with just one page of The Daily Stoic by Ryan Holiday.
He knew that if he could just get himself to read one page, he was more likely to keep going.
It's amazing how much power there is in simply starting, even if it's just a tiny step.
And that's one of the core principles of habit formation, consistency over intensity.
Okay, so he's got a cue. He's made it attractive. He's made it easy. How did he make it satisfying?
For this habit, he relied primarily on the intrinsic rewards of reading, the pleasure of learning new things, the joy of immersing himself in a good story.
So he's tapping into that inherent sense of satisfaction that comes from engaging in activities that are meaningful to him.
And he also found that tracking his progress, how many books he read each month, how many pages he read each day, provided an additional layer of motivation.
So he's still tracking his progress, even though the primary reward is the experience itself.
And that brings us to the bad habit, that insidious social media scroll.
Ah, yes, the bane of our modern existence. How did he break free from that digital vortex?
He started by making the habit less appealing, less attractive, by making his phone less interesting.
Interesting. So instead of trying to resist the temptation, he's actually reducing the power of the temptation itself.
Exactly. He deleted a bunch of those time-wasting apps, the ones that were designed to keep him hooked.
So he's taking control of his digital environment, making it less conducive to mindless scrolling.
And he also used that reprogramming technique we talked about, where he consciously focused on the downsides of excessive social media use.
So he's shifting his mindset, reminding himself that those quick hits of dopamine are actually not that fulfilling in the long run.
And he would literally say things to himself like, consuming is the easy, lazy option. I want to be a producer, not a consumer.
Wow, that's powerful. It's like he's appealing to his higher self, reminding himself of his values and aspirations.
And then to increase the friction, to make the habit harder to do, he started keeping his phone out of sight while he was working.
So no more phone on the desk, constantly tempting him with notifications.
Exactly. He would put it in a drawer in another room, out of sight and out of mind.
I love that. It's a simple strategy, but it can be so effective.
And for that extra layer of accountability, he enlisted his partner's help.
Yeah.
If she caught him using social media during work hours, he had to pay her $10.
Ouch. That's a pretty powerful deterrent. I wonder if my partner would be up for this.
It sounds like it was a really effective strategy for him.
It's so inspiring to see how he was able to break free from that bad habit by combining those four laws in such a creative and personalized way.
And it really highlights the importance of experimentation. What works for one person might not work for another.
So it's about finding your own unique blend of strategies, the ones that resonate with your personality and your goals.
And it's also about being patient with yourself. Habit change is a process, not an overnight transformation.
It's a journey, not a destination.
And speaking of journeys, I'm reminded of another powerful concept from that video, the importance of embracing failure as part of the process.
Right, that whole idea of planning for those inevitable slip-ups.
He even had that great quote, lost days hurt you more than successful days help you.
Which is such a powerful reminder that consistency is key.
And his rule was to never miss twice in a row. Even if he had a bad day and completely fell off track, he would always make sure to get back on track the next day.
So it's about damage control, right? not letting those slip-ups derail your entire progress.
Exactly. And he also emphasized that even doing a tiny version of your habit is better than doing nothing at all.
So if you don't have time for a full workout, just do a few push-ups.
Or if you're feeling too tired to read, just read one paragraph.
It's about maintaining that momentum even on those days when you're not feeling your best.
And he even suggested incorporating this into your habit contract.
Interesting. How would that work?
So for example, your contract could state that if you miss a workout, you have to do at least 5 push-ups that day, no matter what.
Or if you skip your reading, you have to read at least 1 page before bed.
It's a way to ensure that you're still showing up, even in a small way.
I love that. It's like a minimum baseline for consistency.
And he even talked about reframing bad days as opportunities for growth.
Oh, I like that. It's a chance to learn from your mistakes and adjust your approach accordingly.
Instead of beating yourself up, you see those slip-ups as valuable feedback.
And that brings us back to that powerful concept of identity-based habit.
Right. It's about focusing on who you want to become rather than just what you want to achieve.
So instead of setting a goal to lose 10 pounds, it's about becoming the type of person who prioritizes their health and makes healthy choices effortlessly.
Exactly. Because your current habits are a reflection of your current identity.
So if you want to change your habits, you need to start by changing your beliefs about yourself.
It's about shifting those limiting beliefs and replacing them with empowering ones.
So it's not just about changing your actions, it's about changing your self-concept.
Exactly. And it's about recognizing that your habits are the outward expression of your inner identity.
So if you want to create lasting change, you need to start by examining your beliefs about yourself.
And then make sure your actions are aligned with those beliefs.
It's like that Gandhi quote, "Be the change you want to see in the world."
But in this case, it's be the change you want to see in yourself.
This is such powerful stuff. It's really making me think about my own habits and how they're shaping my life.
And it's a reminder that we have the power to choose the habits that serve us, the ones that lead us towards our desired destination.
So before we move on to the final part of this deep dive, I'd love to hear from you.
What has resonated with you the most from this conversation? What insights are you taking away from this exploration of habits?
You know what I think for me, what's really resonating is like, just how much power we actually have.
We do.
Over our lives when we understand these principles.
Right.
It's not about luck. It's not about willpower.
No. Nope.
It's about
strategy.
Strategy. It's about self-awareness.
It's about understanding how your brain works.
Yeah.
And then working with it.
And I think for me, that idea of identity-based habits really hit home.
Oh, yeah.
Because I've always struggled with procrastination.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized, like, I've just been carrying around this belief that I'm a procrastinator.
Yeah, we all have those little limiting beliefs.
And they become self-fulfilling prophecies.
Totally, if you believe it. You're going to act accordingly.
So instead of focusing on trying to not procrastinate, I'm going to start focusing on becoming the type of person who's organized, who prioritizes their tasks, who takes action.
I love that shift.
Yeah.
Yeah, and like every time you act in alignment with that, you're going to reinforce it.
It's like those small course adjustments
that
compound over time.
And it leads you to a totally different place.
And it's not about being perfect.
No.
It's about progress.
Progress, not perfection.
And showing up for yourself.
Even when you don't feel like it.
Even when you don't feel like it.
And giving yourself some grace.
Yeah. What about you?
Yeah.
What are you taking away from this?
What really stood out to me was that temptation bundling.
Oh.
Yeah. I'm going to be trying that.
It's so clever.
It's so simple, but it's like, why haven't I thought of this?
Yeah, it's like so simple, but so brilliant.
Yeah.
It's all about like leveraging that dopamine, that anticipation of reward to make those things that we kind of dread more enticing.
You actually start looking forward to it.
Yeah.
Because you're like, oh, I get to do this.
Yeah.
While I'm doing this other thing that I don't want to do.
This whole conversation has been so empowering.
It has.
It's given me like a whole new set of tools, strategies for creating positive change.
Yeah. And it all starts with that one small step.
Yeah.
So what is that one habit?
You know what? Inspired by that YouTube creator.
Yeah.
I think I'm going to commit to 10 minutes of reading every morning.
Oh, I love that.
Right after I make my coffee.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Stack it.
Habit stacking.
Yeah. Make it easy on yourself though.
Okay.
Like have a good book that you're excited about.
Okay.
Have like a cozy little reading nook.
Okay.
And maybe set a timer so you don't get too carried away.
Great tips.
Yeah.
I'm feeling motivated.
Yeah.
Ready to take action.
That's what we like to hear.
This has been such an insightful deep dive.
It has.
Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
And thank you for listening.
We'll see you next time.
We'll catch you on the next deep dive.